This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:35. Operating a city is a complicated business. Cities provide a variety of services, from public safety and road repair to clean water and public parks. There are multiple departments, a mishmash of funding streams, and lots of state and federal regulations to observe. The city of Fairmont has launched an interactive program to make sure its citizens understand the city's role and responsibilities and its processes for serving the public. Sarah Lowther Hensley reports on Fairmont 101.
When you label a class 101, you generally mean it's going to introduce the student to the basics of its subject, ABC 123. Fairmont 101 is no exception. Participants meet for 2 hours once a month to learn about different aspects of Fairmont's city government. They hear from department heads and tour facilities. City Manager Jay Rogers says the nine-month program starts out with an orientation and history session.
We go over the form of government that we operate under, the various departments that we have, the state code that we work under, which, you know, the last year and now this year for 101, we had a great discussion about Dillon's rule versus home rule, because home rule has been such a hot topic in West Virginia with municipalities, and got them through the part of how Fairmont even came to be, taking us from Middletown, Virginia, all the way to Fairmont, West Virginia.
After that first session, participants go on to learn about the roles of city officials, planning and community development, public safety, both fire and police, finance and budget, utilities, building inspections and code enforcement, public works, and quality of life. Rogers got the idea for Fairmont 101 from a conference he attended. One of the presenters was from the city of Decatur, Georgia, whose 101 program was helping citizens there understand how their local government works. He says Fairmont suffers from some of the same confusion Decatur deals with, namely the confusion over the jurisdiction of neighboring municipalities, county government, and the state. For example, Fairmont gets calls from citizens wanting action on state road repairs or needing help with an issue that's not within Fairmont's city limits. The 101 program helps clear up some of that misunderstanding and educates participants about the city of Fairmont's specific roles and responsibilities. Rogers says department heads already see the benefit of having this face-to-face interaction with citizens.
And they'll talk about how nice it was to get that person to understand why we plow the streets in the manner that we plow them, you know, that we give first priorities to school routes and hills and people that we know are on dialysis and things like that, and alleys are going to be last, and now people can understand.
Participants see the benefits too. Rogers says one woman in the first Fairmont 101 group told him that being more informed is a plus.
She said, "I now know how to save time. I know if I have an issue with a vacant, dilapidated house, I don't need to call the city manager. I don't need to call my council member. I need to call the code enforcement department, and that's where I need to go." She said, "And before, I may make 4 phone calls, and everybody eventually got me to the code enforcement officer, but now I know who to call."
Marianne Moran is in the current Fairmont 101 class. She says she's learned something new at each session. She's been active in Marion County for many years, but sees this as an opportunity to learn more about how the city works.
A lot of people complain about what the city is and isn't doing, and I thought, well, that's sort of not fair, and I'd like to come and learn about the inner workings of all the departments of the city and just learn how it functions.
Moran has thrown her hat into the ring to run for city council. Rogers says that type of involvement is a natural outgrowth of the Fairmont 101 program. He says it comes down to finding new ways to engage citizens and help them become more active in their community. He's pleased with the variety of people who've signed up: retirees, college students, and people who work in Fairmont but live elsewhere. Some businesses or other entities that work with the city or hope to work with the city have also sent some of their people through the program to get a better idea of how the city works. Rogers says he would definitely recommend that other cities in West Virginia consider offering a 101-type program. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Sarah Lowther Hensley in Fairmont.
West Virginia can actually thrive under new U.S. environmental protection regulations that aim to reduce greenhouse gases, according to 3 panelists participating in a public forum last week in Shepherdstown. Liz McCormick has more.
West Virginia must cut back its carbon emission rate by 20% by the year 2030 under the EPA regulations. The panelists leading the forum entitled EPA Carbon Rules, How Can West Virginia Lead, voiced confidence that the state can meet that goal and create jobs as well. The West Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club organized the event. Jefferson County resident Mary Ann Hitt is director of the organization's Beyond Coal campaign.
There is a lot of misinformation out there about this rule and what it requires of coal or gas or an energy efficiency. And the fact of the matter is, here in West Virginia, we can meet the standard through energy efficiency, through wind and solar, through clean energy that's going to provide a lot of new jobs in the state. And it's a really exciting opportunity. We all know that we're struggling with low employment here in West Virginia, and we need more economic opportunity, and this is a great way to bring it to the state.
Aside from Hitt, two other panelists seem to get the most reaction from the audience. One was David Levine, who is a leader in the West Virginia solar industry. Levine is founder and CEO of the company Geostellar Solar, which is based in Martinsburg.
This regulation is not job-killing regulation. It really is going to spur a whole new energy economy, which is really good for consumers in that it's actually going to lower their utility bills, and it's going to spur jobs, because solar creates many more jobs per megawatt than big centralized nuclear power plants or coal plants or natural gas power plants.
Levine says that the installation process is frighteningly simple.
Our business is a solar energy marketplace, and the idea is we match people who want to go solar with the right solutions. We tell you exactly how much energy you can produce on your particular rooftop, and then the value of that energy based on the energy you'll displace. So if I used to have a monthly energy bill of $120 a month, it says your new total electricity cost with your solar plus what you'll still be paying the utility company for a reduced usage might be down to $80 a month. And that's what we compare.
Levine says once Geostellar Solar does a site assessment of your home, it takes a licensed contractor about a day to install the panels. But if it's so easy, why aren't more people taking advantage of it?
The reason people aren't going solar today is because they don't have role models. Where it's still so sparse, there's not a sense of, oh, it's common. It's hard to say when the tipping point is going to be. It's like the movement from the horseless carriage to the automobile. You know, cars were foreign. It was like, how can this possibly move without this horse? It's going to be the same thing at some point. People aren't going to talk about solar energy. It's just going to be energy.
Marketing consultant and Jefferson County resident Sean O'Leary says the numbers involving jobs in coal just don't add up.
From the time West Virginia hit its peak in employment in 1940 with about 130,000 jobs, we have dropped down to only about 19,000 jobs now. But in the meantime, the extraction of coal has actually increased. The bottom line is that employment in the coal industry has not ever, at least since 1929, been driven by the volume of coal that's being extracted. And so consequently, when politicians say that by defending the industry and increasing the hoping to increase the use of coal, they're defending West Virginia jobs, it simply isn't true.
The conversation about how the new EPA regulations will impact the country will continue at a public hearing in Washington, D.C. on July 29th. The Sierra Club is sponsoring a bus to take Eastern Panhandle residents who are interested in attending. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:44. Some fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today, but there is a chance of scattered rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 80s today, hazy overnight with lows in the 60s, partly sunny on Wednesday with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures remaining in the 80s, and the outlook for Thursday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by Thrasher, providing architecture and land planning, design, project estimation, and cost controls, complemented by landscape architecture services. Details at ThrasherENG.com.
More Americans than ever before are turning to oriental medicine and acupuncture to heal and prevent disease. Many states, including Virginia, now license practitioners and regulate the industry. As the sector grows, there's more demand for Chinese medicinal herbs, an important aspect of the practice. A new project underway to grow these herbs is taking root in Floyd County, Virginia. Robbie Harris of WVTF has the story.
The ones on the top here are the ones that we can grow at the clinic here, but most of these are sourced from China and elsewhere on the West Coast.
David Grimsley is standing in what looks like a very clean country kitchen. He's pointing to a wall with shelves of large glass jars of what look like cooking ingredients. But this is the Blue Ridge Center for Chinese Medicine in Pilot, Virginia. And these are Chinese medicinal herbs. Instead of writing a prescription, clinical herbologists choose from what's here on the shelf to treat their patients.
This is Trichosanthes. We go by their Latin names as opposed to their Chinese pinyin medicinal name because we're farmers working with the herbs themselves and not the medicine. The pinyin, or the Chinese name, refers to the actual medicine, to the final product. With something like Trichosanthes, this is a perennial melon, and one wonderful thing about it is the skin is used, the seeds are used, the fruit is used, and the root is used, and they're all for something different.
In China, medicinal herbs have been wild harvested for thousands of years, but increasing environmental pollution, over-harvesting, and sometimes unreliable quality control mean Chinese imports may not be enough to fill the growing demand for the herbs in this country. That's why Grimsley and Nate Sloan are growing herbs here on the sunny slopes outside the Blue Ridge Center.
A lot of these herbs we are going to let flower and be pollinated and grow for the seed because there is such a need for the seed for the whole country. We really want to make sure that there's enough seed available for everybody who wants to grow.
How do you know about that demand? What's your evidence that there's that demand?
Because we've called around looking for seed, and it's hard to find. And so we just have to use what we have, which is a wonderful thing.
Jean Giblet owns High Fall Farms in New York's Hudson Valley. She's been growing Chinese medicinal herbs since 1993. She heads a nonprofit foundation and is a member of the Eastern Forest Chinese Herbal Medicine Consortium.
There's a constant increase in demand because of the growing popularity of the profession. The herbs are gradually becoming more expensive imported from China, and that's because there's a wide range of quality. And, of course, no one wants to buy the lesser quality herbs.
The key is careful sourcing of the herbs and the often personal relationship between growers and practitioners who know and trust them. That's why the Chinese medicinal herb farm here in Floyd is looking to create a consortium of Appalachian medicinal herb growers who meet the standards. Nate Sloan.
Ideally, we would be branding our own name of product, kind of more of like a rootstock or a seed that we can stand behind our product and we can then supply our region.
Some of these herbs have been growing here at the Blue Ridge Center for the past several years, but this autumn will be the consortium's first harvest. Sloan and Grimsley are project directors for what they hope will be a growing number of certified Chinese medicinal herb farmers around here.
One thing to know about it is we're not trying to be competitive about this. We are throwing it out there to the farmers saying, hey, if you want to diversify your crops, we'd love to help you.
In part two of our report, we'll take a closer look at how Chinese medicinal herbs are grown and used in traditional Chinese healing practices.
You know, this is, I feel like, a very interesting time to be alive because I feel like we're taking the wisdom from many different cultures and bringing it together as the American experience, and hopefully it's a more global experience.
I'm Robbie Harris.
And part two of this report airs tomorrow on West Virginia Morning. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.